Good morning. Today's daf in Baba Kama Samach Aleph. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is learned with Zecher Nishmas Liba Gabriela Bas Shmuel. We find ourselves in Samach Amud Beis. We are at the two dots right in the middle of the Amud. It's the fourth wider line. It's starting with Yosef Rav Ami Rav Asi. We got involved yesterday with a little bit of Agadata. It's been a while since the Gemara has tackled some Agadata. We are in the middle of the sixth parak of Bava Kama, Daf Samach, yesterday's Daf. And we were discussing Nizkei Esh, the damages that are done by a fire. It's the last topic of the Nezek section. Nezek section of Bava Kama extends from the first to the sixth parak, including the sixth parak. When we continue later this week, tomorrow, really, one more day of Nezek Beish. When we continue this week with the seventh parak of the Masechta, so we start with the topics of Geneva Vigzela. So in this last topic of Nezek that we're discussing in the course of the end of the sixth parak of Baba Kama, so we're talking about some of the basic rules and regulations of Nezek that's created by fire. More of that's coming up over the course of this morning's daf. But then the Gemara took a little bit of a turn in terms of discussing a little bit of Agadata regarding what people should do when there is Dever, when there's Ra'av, what should be the general response of people. We are now continuing Yosef Rav Ami Rav Asi. So the Gemara tells the following incident where Rav Ami and Rav Asi were sitting in front of Kamed Rav Ni'iz Chagnav Chamar Amar Leh Lemamar Shmaitata Umar Amar Leh Lemamar Agadata. So there was requests. Reminds me of the old jukebox. So there were two requests that were put into to Rav Yitzchak Nafcha. One is that he teach them Shmaitata. Shmaitata meaning halacha, what you and I would call a regular sugya of Gemara. And the other one says Agadata. No, I'd rather hear Agadata. So there were two requests that were made by the Amoraim. Pasach lememar Agadata velo shavik mar. Pasach lememar Shmaitata velo shavik mar. And each one was dead set on what they want to learn over the course of that day. Just imagine, I'm coming from the teacher's perspective. This is where there were two students. Yeah. Imagine if it was a whole classroom of kids. Anyway, but the one who wanted to hear Shmaitata was refusing to hear Agadata. The one who wanted to hear Agadata was refusing to hear Shmaitata. So Arma Lahem Mshulcha Moshul Mahadavadomas. So at which point he realized you're putting me in an impossible position. And I'll give you a mashal just to explain to you how impossible this is. La'adam Sheish Lo Shtei Nashim. Like a man who has two wives, Achas Yalada Vachas Zakena. Now one of the wives is young, the other one's older. And Yalada Malaketzes Lilavano, so the younger wife does not want to see the gray hairs on his face. So she plucks out the gray hairs. And Zakena Malaketzes Lo Shcharos. And the older woman doesn't want to see such a young husband, doesn't want her husband to appear so young. So she's going to take the black hairs on his face and pull them out. Nimtze Kerech Mikan Mikan. So now after his white hairs and his black hairs, I guess he had salt and pepper beard. So after his white hairs and his black hairs now been plucked out, so he has no hair whatsoever. So Amar Lahen, so obviously the Nimshal is that he's saying to the two of his students, look, you want to hear Agadata, you don't want to hear Halacha. You want to hear Halacha, you don't want to hear Agadata. But when all said and done, I'm going to be Kerech, Mizeh, Mizeh. In other words, you're going to put me in a position where basically I'm not going to be able to teach any Torah. I mean, what else do I have left? It's either going to be Halacha or it's going to be Agadata, but it can't be both. It can't be none of the two. So Amar Lahem. Okay, so after the mashal was given, so then he says, you know what, compromise. I'll give you something which is shavla chol nefesh. So both of you will love it. So obviously, you knew where we're heading in this direction because we're discussing now the topic of Eish. So obviously, the Gemara is introducing a story over here that is relevant to Eish. So the Torah says that when the fire goes out, and it comes, the first thing that it comes onto is kotsim. As we've discussed already, their thorns are very flammable. So teitzei me'atzma. So what does it sound like? What does the nature of this fire sound like? It kind of popped up on its own. Teitzei me'atzma. Shalem shalem hamavir sabeira. And meanwhile, the one who started is going to have ownership over that fire. And to which HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, so I'm the one who's going to take responsibility for starting the fire. And because I'm taking responsibility, so I'm going to reimburse you for the fire that I caused. Ani hitzitzi esh b'tzion, shenema v'yasas esh b'tzion, v'tochal yisod oseha. Okay, very appropriate for the time of year that we're in. Right, just less than 2 weeks away, we're going to be hearing Eicham on Tisha B'Av. So, I was going by date. It's a Nidcha, so it's going to be on Sunday. Okay, so 2 weeks away. So 2 weeks away, we're going to be hearing from Eicha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'yaseish B'tzim V'tochel Yisod Oseha. And the Gemara over here is saying, right, the Navi's not saying it as clearly, but the Gemara is saying it very clearly. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the one who's taking ownership of the fire. V'ani Asi Livnosa Be'esh, and I'm the one who's going to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash with fire as well. Shenemar V'ani Ayelacha Chomas Eish Aviv V'lechavod Eyebisocha. I will be a wall of fire around you, and I will be an honor inside of the fire. Just a parenthetical note, I'm sure you knew this already, but we have on Tisha B'Av, we have a special bracha that we insert into the Shemoneh Esrei. For reasons which I'm not going to go through right now in terms of all the details, so we've limited, I don't know the Sephardic practice. So if you want to make me a little bit more informed, but we only have the practice of saying this bracha in Mincha of Tisha B'Av. We don't say it in Shacharis, right? No. I'm talking about a special bracha for Tisha B'Av. So for this special bracha of Tisha B'Av, it's Nachem, and it's inserted in the bracha Bona Yerushalayim. You say in Shacharis also, right? Okay, I had a suspicion that you do it more than just okay. Anyway, so if you go through the nusach, I'm not going to go through the whole nusach right now. But again, it's so appropriate in terms of timing, so I'll just bring it up. So if you go through the nusach right now, I have the sitter open, and it's it says at the end, Libi. I'm sorry. So it says, you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, lit the fire, and you're going to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash with fire again. Ka'amor, as the Pasuk says, V'ani Allah, Noam Hashem, Chomas Eish Aviv, V'l'chavod Eyeh B'socha. Okay, quotes the Pasuk from Zechariah, second paragraph of Zechariah. That the Ari Gemara is quoting right over here. So you get the sense from the Gemara, from the Tefillah of Nachem, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to rebuild the third Beis HaMikdash. And this is, I think, most famously articulated by Rashi. Rashi in the Gemara, I think, you'll forgive me, I forget exactly where the Rashi is. I have it somewhere in my head that it's in Tanis. Yeah. Okay. Right now, I'm going to say Tanis, and then I should have checked it beforehand. I apologize. But anyway, Rashi brings down that the third base of Mikdash is going to come down in Neshamayim, meaning that we are not going to have any participation in the building of the third base of Mikdash, but it's going to come down in Neshamayim. So that Rashi is certainly supported by our Gemara over here in the Tefillah that we say in Nachem, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to rebuild the base of Mikdash out of fire. Now, again, I don't exactly know what that means. I don't perfectly understand how to visualize that, but certainly the sense that you get is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, Bechor of Atzma, is going to build the third base of Mikdash. On the other side of this issue, it's just interesting information. On the other side of that issue, the Rambam does not give that indication. The Rambam indicates that we're going to build the Beis HaMikdash. The only thing we need is a Melech. We need a Melech HaMashiach. But after we have a Melech HaMashiach, so we're going to build the third Beis HaMikdash. So there seems to be a basic machlokus amongst the Rishonim, who's going to be the responsible party of building the third Beis HaMikdash. Is it going to be us, or is it going to be a Kosh Baruch Hu? So it's not perfectly clear, but our Gemara certainly seems to favor the position of Hashem is taking care of it in terms of the building of the third Beis HaMikdash. Okay, let us continue in the Gemara. We are... So, Chomas Eishavu L'Chavod Eyeh B'socha. Shmaitita. All right, now obviously, again, remember the context of this story. So he had two Talmidim, and one wanted to hear Agadato, and the other one wanted to hear Halacha. So we just satisfy the agadic portion of the of this teaching from this pasuk. Now we need halacha because he wanted something that's going to satisfy both. Shmaitita, Pasuk HaKasa Benitzke Mamona V'Sim Benitzke Gufa. Now, if you look at the Pasuk treats fire differently. Meaning in the beginning of the Pasuk, the Pasuk describes fire as being Nizke Mamono. Meaning, hey, take a look at Rashi over here. Rashi writes, Shehizik Mamono. It's your money doing damage. It's Dichsiv Kiseitse. Meaning the focus on the first part of the Pasuk is the fire itself. The fire went out and did damage. Much like your animal goes out and does damage. That's Nizke Mamona. That's your property doing damage. So, Mashma Me'atzma Shedlik B'Soch Shalava Hacha V'Daka B'Soch Shal Chavero. And meanwhile, as you read on in the Pasuk, so that it says, in the end of the Pasuk, HaMavir, the one who started the fire, meaning focus is going on not the fire itself, but the one who generated the fire, which sounds like Nizke Gufo. So, Pasuk HaKasim Nizke Mamona V'Sim Nizke Gufo LaMalacha Yishom Hashem Chitzo. And what is that teaching us? It teaches us that Rav Yochanan is correct. Or I should say more correct. More accurate. Remember the Gemara all the way back on Daf Chav Beis. It's been some time ago that we did this Gemara in Baba Kama, but about a month and a half ago now, where we learned together that Machlok Tshin Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish, how to look at the Nezek of Eish. Is Isha Mishim Chitza, Isha Mishim Mamono? Is fire a function of, it's like you shooting an arrow, it's your Kawach, and basically it's you, or Isha Mishim Mamono? Or is Eish really your money doing damage? And if you remember Rashi, it's such a fascinating Rashi. Tosas went ballistic on this Rashi. But Rashi said, what's an afkamini between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish? Let's say you start a fire using somebody else's fire. Meaning not your own fire. So would you be chayev? So according to Rav Yochanan, you would be. And according to Reish Lakish, you'd be pater. Because if we're treating fire like your property, so only, you're only liable for damage that's done by your property. You're not going to be liable for damage that's done with someone else's property. So Rashi over there said that's an afkamina meeting between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. In the meantime, the way the pasuk is formulated, it sounds like Rav Yochanan is more correct, meaning that when the Torah discusses the nezek of Eish, the Torah discusses it in the context of you doing the damage, meaning Isha Mishum Chitza. Vaitaved David Vayomer Mishkeni Maimi Bor, Beis Lechem, Asher Bishar, Vayivaku, Shloshet Hagiborim, Bemachane Plishtim, Vayishavu Maimi Bor, Beis Lechem, Asher Bishar. Okay, we are in Shmuel Beis, Perchof, Gimel Shmuel Beis, and a dialogue takes place during a battle with the Plishtim. And it's really not clear. Right, David is asking Mishkei Nimayim, he wants some water from Bor Beis Lechem, which is a Asher B'Shar. Now, every time you see the word Shar, so Shar is a reference to the Sanhedrin, meaning that he had a question that he posed to the Sanhedrin. And Vayivaku Shlosha Gibran Mamachan Plishim Vayishavu Maimi Bor Beis Lechem Asher B'Shar. And so water was brought to him, and the Navi goes on to describe how he refused the water. And the Gemara understands all this as not the literal sense of he wanted water, they brought him water, he turned it down, but rather water over here in the sense of Torah. He had a question that he submitted to the Beis Din. The Beis Din gave him an answer, and he turned down the answer, he rejected the answer. And with all that stated, so now, what was the question that David HaMelech asked? What was the answer that was given to him? And why did he refuse it? And that's going to cover our discussion until the next Mishnah.
And did
he refuse it? Okay, well, that's what we're going to be discussing. So, my kami ba'ilei. So, Amar Rav Nachman, Taman Beish kami ba'ilei. So, the Gemara's first, there are going to be three different opinions over here. So the Gemara's first opinion is that the question was the question of Taman Beish. We're going to be seeing the Mishnah later this morning. The Mishnah teaches us, and we've seen this already a number of times in the Masechta, a machlokes hatanayim, if I light a fire and the fire goes in and traverses into someone else's property and it burns their haystack and he happens to have been hiding something in the haystack, so Rav Yehuda says, sorry, let's start with the Chachamim. Chachamim say, Pater, I do not have to pay for that which is hidden in the haystack. This is the rule of Taman Beish, the Petur of Taman Beish. And Rav Yehuda says, no, the person would be Chayiv. So it's a Machlokas Tanayim. And yesterday we talked a little bit about what the source of this Machlokas is in terms of the Psukim. But right now, for our purposes, all we need to know is it's a Machlokas Tanayim. And what David HaMelech was asking was, who does the Halacha fall like? Iker Rav Yehuda, Iker Rabbanan. Upashtulei madapashtulei. Now, in terms of the answer, they gave him the answer. And he turned down the answer. And right now, that's opinion number one. Rav Huna Amar Gidishim de Sa'orim de Yisrahavu. Davu Mitmer Plishim Behu. So the Gemara says, the second approach is that it was a pile of barley. And it belonged to a Jew. And there were plishim hiding inside of it. Can I destroy other people's property in order to save my life? Classic question the Gemara asks. This is not the first place the Gemara has asked this question. Gemara asks it elsewhere as well. Can I save my life with other people's property?
You can kill another person to save your life, so of course my property. You can defend yourself and kill someone.
By killing the actual assailant, by killing the...
So for sure the property.
But in other words, it's not your property. It's someone else's property. Okay. We'll discuss more of it later in the Masechta. This is coming up again. But right now, that was the question that he asked. So, So the answer that the Beis Din gave was, you know, fundamentally, you're not allowed to do it. You cannot save yourself with other people's money. But you're a king. And because you're a king, so therefore you have right away. Right, what's the legal term? Eminent domain. Thank you. So you have right away, so you can do it. Meaning the as far as the public is concerned, no. You can't save yourself with other people's money. As far as you're concerned, you can. That is the second opinion in terms of what the exchange was. And the Gemara gives a third opinion. So it was the barley belonged to the Jew, and the lentils belonged to the plishtim. The kami bayi lahu, mali tol gedishin shol sa'orim di Yisrael, liten lifnei behemto, amanath l'shalim, Gedishim shall adash and aplishtim. So can we take, right? I was going to say borrow, but it's going to be more than borrow. Can we take the barley of the Jew, use it to feed our animals, and make restitution, reimburse them with the pile of lentils that belong to the plishtim? And because we're going to go to war against the plishtim, and because we're going to beat the plishtim, so eventually that's going to become ours. And so, can I do that? Shachulei chavol yashiv rasha gazela yishalem afa pishik zela mishalem rasha hu. If you steal and you pay back, so you are a gazlan, even though you paid back, and you're a rasha. So in other words, no, you can't steal, even though you have the full intent of paying back. I mean, generally speaking, we refer to this also as chamas, extortion. But over here, it's more than extortion, meaning I'm taking it without him even knowing it, and I'm going to pay him back. So that you can't do that, and you're considered rasha. However, aval ata melchato melch parts lasos laderech vein mochim biado. But you're the king, and sometimes as a king, if you need to do something where it's good, you're going to infringe on other people's rights and properties, so you have the right to do so. So you're going to be in a position where you can do so.
Okay. You said there are three opinions so far. So, what are the sources? How did Rabbi Yehuda, where did
he
get this from?
A Gemara, I mean, they're kind of encrypted in the Pesukim. The Gemara is going to spend a little bit of time right now trying to show how each position better fits into the Pesukim themselves.
Understanding was based on Pesukim.
Yeah, okay, and maybe Masorah as well. Maybe also that each one of them had their own particular tradition. Now, Bishlam Alaman Dar Melachlufei, so Heinu Dichsiv Chadkra. So the Gemara says now, if the question was a question of exchange, meaning this third opinion that we just went over, where he wanted to exchange the barley for the lentils, so the Gemara says actually that works out really well. Why? Because we have a discrepancy in with this. The same story is told in two places in Tanakh. One, primary source, if you will, Shmuel Beis, where we just went over, Shmuel Beis, Baruch Hav Gimel. And the second time in Divrei Yamim. Divrei Yamim is a chronicle, in fact, I think that's the English term that describes it. It's a chronicle of the Jewish people from Adam HaRishon all the way to the Chorban Bayis Rishon. And in Divrei Yamim, so a lot of the stories that are told over in the Nevi'im are going to be repeated, with subtle differences that exist between the two. And they are differences which speak to speak to another level of understanding. So the Gemara says over here, let's compare. Vati shem chalkas ha-sadeh melea adashim uksiv chad kra, vati chalkas ha-sadeh melea sa'orim. So when you compare the psukim that describe this event, in one place it's described as lentils, in the other place it's described as barley, so that's good. So that speaks to the idea that what his question was is that he wanted to exchange the barley for the lentils. Take the barley and reimburse with lentils. Good. So that is a good indication that the third opinion is correct. So, but if you say that his question was a question of starting a fire, either in position number one or in position number two, so the Gemara says, so then how do you deal with this discrepancy? So the Gemara says, well, it's not so hard. You could say that let's assume opinion number two. Where there were plishtim that are hiding, he wanted to burn other people's property in order to save themselves. So it could just very well be that there were various piles of grain. One pile of grain, which was made up of barley, another pile of grain, which is made up of lentils. The Gemara says, okay, it's not so hard to explain. The Gemara says, if the question was, we're going now to opinion number two, if the question was saving themselves and using other people's property in order to save themselves, so the Gemara says, that's very good. I can totally understand that. The Navi describes Vayatzila. He wanted to save himself. But if the question was opinion number three, where he wanted to take the barley and exchange it with lentil, so Delo Shaviku Lachlufe. So the Gemara says how do you understand the Vayatzila? So the Gemara says Delo Shaviku Lachlufe. So it could very well be that they wouldn't allow him to exchange, and that's how they were saved, meaning they were saved from Issa. Bishlama hani tarte hani dichsiv trei cry. Elaman damer tamam beish kam ibayle mai ibayle cry. So the Gemara says now, if you understand either opinion number two or opinion number three, where either he was asking about saving himself with other people's money, or he was asking about exchanging barley for lentils. So Gemara says, so fine. So then I understand the need for two psukim. But if you're going to go with opinion number one, that what he was asking was tamen beish, whether or not one is going to be liable for a tamen beish. We are now on the top of samcham alf lamed aleph. So my ibayle cry. So what exactly is the psukim here speaking to? Amlecha tamon. So the Gemara says, fine. So really what you could say if you're subscribing to opinion number one is that really what David HaMelech was asking was actually two questions. He was asking first the question of Taman, and then and on top of that he was also asking a question of either saving themselves with other people's money or exchanging barley for the lentils. Now, in the second or the third opinion, you can understand David HaMelech's refusal to drink the water, which now we're understanding doesn't mean actually water, but refusing to accept the answer. So in question number two, or in opinion number three, you understand why he declined the answer. Because Amar, Kevadiki Surah Lo Nichali. His response is, remember, in both two and three, the answer was no, but you're the king. To which now you understand, good, I'm the king, but there's an Isser involved, and for the quote unquote for the common folk, right? For the rest of us, we're not allowed to do it. So David HaMelech says, I don't want to help myself to any type of special dispensation because I'm the king. You understand why he declined. Elaman damar taman beish kami baile michti gemaruhu deshachule milo avid David l'shosam. So the Gemara says so, but let's understand. If the question was, what is the halacha regarding taman beish, and he got an answer from them, so what is he doing declining the answer? And in opinion number two and opinion number three, we totally understand what he's declining. He's declining his special status of being a king and that special dispensation. He didn't want to help himself to that. But in question number one, either the halacha vazik, the chachamim, or like Rabbi Yehuda. And he posed a question, and they gave an answer, and what is he declining?
There's so, a big difficulty with that question, Tony, because we learned before that if you did it for your daim, you made a fire for your daim,
yeah.
You are higher with
yeah. Right, right.
Only when it's...
when it spreads.
Right, so here he's asking, am I allowed to burn the field
mm-hmm.
in order to save... because the priests
okay.
were hiding...
Could be. Field. Okay, I hear you. So, okay, I hear. So the Gemara says, Yishachle, Milo Avid David L'shosam, Delo Amrin Mishmaihu. So, the what David refused was the fact that they said it, but they did not give proper attribution in terms of who they said it in the name of. Amr Kachma Kulban Min Beis Din Shoshmoa Ramasi, Kalamosa Atzma Lamavis, Al Divrei Torah, Ein Omrim Dvar Halacha Mishmo. Anyone who is prepared to give their lives and prepare to die over Torah, Ein Omrim Dvar Halacha Mishmo. And if you take... No, I'm sorry. Okay, so in other words, this particular Beis Din was doing was simply risking too much in terms of providing the answer. And Vayasa Chosam LaHashem Bishlam LaManda Amahani Tarti Mishman Da'aved L'Shem Shemayim. So the Gemara says now what he did is that he poured his libation towards the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Meaning, again, in our understanding, declining the answer. Now, according to opinion number two and opinion number three, Mishum Da'avah L'Shem Shamayim. In other words, he was in a perfectly good position to decline because his intent was L'Shem Shamayim. He didn't want to help himself to having this king's right. But if you take the first opinion that the question that he asked was Taman Be'esh, so what does it mean that when the Navi concludes with saying Vayasach Hosam Lashem, so the Gemara says that they said it, but they said it in the name of a tradition, meaning that they wouldn't give proper attribution, and so that's why David HaMelech declined the answer that was given to them. Adkan. All right, so that ends the Ganata for this morning, for yesterday, for this morning. We are continuing the Mishnah. One Samach Aleph Amud Aleph. We are continuing the Mishnah and some very basic halachas regarding Eish. The basic idea what we're going to start with right now is this idea that if you give proper barrier between the fire that you made and your neighbor's property, and somehow the fire jumped over. So you're going to be potter. Basically, ones. Meaning, as long as you took the proper precaution, so you're going to be indemnified. But if you did not take proper precaution, obviously you're going to be liable. So, avra gedeshu gavod al amos oder charabim onar potter. If the fire were to climb over a wall of four amos, right? An am is approximately 4.5 to 2 feet. Let's just, for our purposes, say it's 2 feet. So if it climbed over a wall of 8 feet, so, or it crossed a street. Now, we're going to see in just a moment that the Derech HaRabim over here is going to be a street of 16 amas wide, right? It's like Palmetto, basically. So the Onahar, or it crosses over a river. So these are things that are totally unexpected. You basically did everything within your power to control that fire. And now, unbeknownst to you, the fire spread, and it shouldn't have spread. So putter, so you're going to be exempt because this is now falls under the category of onus. Ve'atanya, the problem with all this is a brisa. The Gemara quotes the brisa. Avra gezeshu gavor arba amos chayef. So the brisa says that if it went over a wall for amos, so you would be chayef. So this brisa goes directly against our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that you're going to be putter, and the brisa says you're going to be chayef. Amar Rav Papa, Tana didan kachash melamala lamata. So the Gemara says like this. Four amos is the border. And basically, in terms of explaining the discrepancy between the Mishnah and the Braisa, so basically it depends on which perspective you're looking from. Our Mishnah is considering from the top down, meaning a wall that's 6 amas high, 5 amas high. So our Mishnah is basically expressing the following. Lamata, shesh amos, I'm sorry, lamata, shesh amos pater, chamesh amos pater, ad arba amos pater. So when you learn our Mishnah, so the way our Mishnah is basically teaching it to us is, if it's a really high wall, you're going to be exempt. If the wall 6 amas high, you're going to be exempt. If it's 5 amas high, it's going to be exempt. Up to, now when we say up to, we mean going down in height, all the way down to 4 amas. Meaning as long as it's above 4 amas, so you're going to be pater. Tana Bura Malamata Lamala. Now, as far as the Bryce is concerned, the Bryce was going in the other direction. Kachashiv Shte Amos Chayiv. Meaning at 2 Amos, you're going to be Chayiv. It's not tall enough. Shalosh Amos Chayiv. At 3 Amos, you're going to be Chayiv. Again, it's not tall enough. Ad Arba Amos. Until Arba Amos, so then you're going to be Chayiv. Because again, 4 Amos is the, that's the threshold. Okay. And what if it's exactly 4 Amos itself? Then I kind of get stuck. Because then you have the Bryce's indicating either direction. But in terms of explaining the Mishnah versus the Braisa, very good. The Mishnah is just coming from the perspective of a really tall wall, bringing it down to the point of where you're no longer going to be Pater. And the Braisa was discussing a really short wall, going up to the point where you're going to be Chayev, and they meet at the point of 4 Amos.
Up until now, anytime the height of the wall or mechitza is always 10 to fucking, but it's really
right. But this is a different discussion. This is not a mechitza halacha. It's a retardation of fire. What's going to stop the fire from moving? Amar Ravadal Amish Amar Depata Afila B'Stei Kotzim. Another detail. The Gemara tells us, let's say the material on the other side of the wall is highly flammable. Meaning Kotzim, we saw this yesterday, we're seeing it again today. Kotzim is considered, from the Torah's perspective, the most flammable material. And so if the fire jumped the wall to go into the other side, and what's on the other side is this really highly flammable material, as long as the wall is 4 amos or taller, you're going to be putter. Amara papa misfas kotzim lamala dal amos. Another detail, yes, you're going to be putter, but it can't be that the thorns were climbing up the wall. Meaning that in order to be putter, there has to be a distance between the top of the wall and the thorns on the other side of 4 amos. Meaning the kotzim have to be on the floor. If the kotzim are scaling up the wall, so then that wall is not going to be, is not going to exempt you from liability. Now we're going to be discussing vertical fires versus horizontal fires. I feel like I'd be very helpful right now if like I had a fireman here in the room and he explained the different natures of fires. I know they're all different types of fires. But basically what the Gemara is going to try to differentiate is between a fire that's vertical, right, just goes up and down, versus a fire that is nichfefes. Now, it's kind of hard for me to describe what nichfefes means, and when I say it's kind of hard for me to describe, I'm in good company, I'm in really good company. Rashi himself also is struggling a little bit in terms of trying to explain what the nichfefes fire is. If you take a look at Rashi, he offers two pshatim, I'll read both pshatim and Rashi. Rashi, aval nichfefes, aruch, mate osa v'kofelets dadin. So one pshan Rashi is that it basically creeps on the ground. It moves horizontally, not vertically. And it kind of skips over, the word doleg, right? It skips over. So Lashon Mori. So Rashi says that's one pshat that I've heard. Lishna Achrina, Rashi gives another pshat. Nechfefes, Eish Namucha, Holeches, Venisreches, Ba'asavim. A really low fire. It basically stays on the grass. Uvik Samim, Shalgabe Karka, right? Grass and little kindle wood, brush fire, that stays low to the ground. Shalgabe Karka, Hilcha, Chafilo, Avra, Derech, Rishos, Rabim, Rechav, Ma'od, Chayev. Whereas we're going to learn in just a moment, Rashi's kind of giving away the Gemara, we're going to learn in just a moment, there, because it's however you want to describe it, a horizontal fire, a low fire, a brush fire, because of the nature of this fire, so there's not going to be an exemption of, you know, it covered a long distance, right? It went over the Rishus HaRabin. So if it's a vertical fire, you're going to be putter. That's what our Mishnah is describing. If it's horizontal, different halacha. So let's see the Gemara inside. Amar Rav. Lo shanu ala bekolachas havam nechfefes afil ad mea ama chayev. Rav's of the opinion that if it's this nechfefes type of fire, brush fire, low fire, horizontal fire, however you want to describe it, even if it traverses 100 amas, you're going to be chayev because you should know that such a fire can travel long distances. Ushmul Amar Masisim Nechvafes. Shmuel disagrees. Shmuel says no. Our Mishnah is talking about a brush fire. But if it's a vertical fire, feel koshu pater. A vertical fire is supposed to stay put, and if it jumps any amount, that's unexpected, and therefore going to be pater. Tanya Kavasi Derav. Now, generally speaking, when it comes to Machlokas Rav and Shmuel, we're talking about Mamonos. So, generally speaking, we side with Shmuel. Here, however, it's going to be slightly different. But the reason why is we're going to see in just a moment is because we're going to have a Braisa supporting the position of Rav. Tanya Kavasi Derav. The Gemara quotes a Braisa supporting Rav. Here, the Braisa says 100 mil if it's a nichfefes fire, if it's this type of brush fire, so you're going to be chayev. Avar naro ushlalish sheheim rechav mechazamas pater. If it crosses a river or a shlolit, we'll explain that in a moment what that means, which is 8 amas wide, you're going to be putter, meaning it's not expected to go over a river. The fire is not expected to jump over a river. Okay. Adkan, so basically a distinction made in terms of type of fire. Machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. Here the halacha falls like Rav because the Braisa supports Rav's position that by a brush fire, these natural barriers are not going to be exempting you from liability. Mantana Amar, I'm sorry, Derech HaRabim. We learned together in the Mishnah that if the fire jumps over a derech harabim, a rishus harabim, so that's unexpected, and therefore you're going to be partner. Mantana amar rava, Rabbi Lazar yidinan, Rabbi Lazar amar sheshes re'amus kederech rishus harabim. We're going to see the Mishnah in just a moment, in a couple minutes from now. The Mishnah is going to give a number of opinions of how wide a gap does a fire have to jump in order for you to be exempt, meaning it's totally unexpected. Rabbi Eliezer's opinion was 16 amas, and our Mishnah here, although it's an anonymous Mishnah, is taking that position, meaning so we lined up the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, which we're going to see in just a moment, and our Mishnah that says 16 amas. Parenthetically, another interesting note, a Rishus HaRabim is 16 amas wide. Right? Do you take a look at the Gemara and Shabbos in the beginning? So the Gemara over there gives the definition, I think Dav Vav. The Gemara over there gives the definition of a Rishus HaYachid and that of a Rishus HaRabim, and that has a lot of halachic significance because you can't make an Eruv around a Rishus HaRabim. You can only make an Eruv in a non-Rishus HaRabim area. So, makes for halachic difficulties where you do have an actual Rishus HaRabim running through town. So, in Brooklyn, it was a big to-do. You have Ocean Parkway running right through the middle of Brooklyn, so that became a big to-do in the previous generation. And, okay, so it's important to know. Derech, I'm sorry. Derech HaRabim. We did that. Oh, Nahar, it crosses a river. Rav Amar Nahar, Mamash Shmuel Amar, Arisa Dedalai. Okay, if the fire jumps over a Nahar, so you're going to be putter because that was unexpected. What is the definition of a Nahar? So Rav gives the simplest definition. It means a river, an actual river. Shmuel says, no, it doesn't have to be an actual river. It could even be Arisa Dedalai. It was some sort of pool of water, reservoir of water that was used for drawing and irrigating. So, mandamarinara mamish, afagav deleka maya, o mandamarisa de delai, esbe maya ineva, lesbe maya lo. Now, interesting, the Gemara points out, actually, this serves as a kula in Rav's position. Because even though Rav defines nara as being a nara mamish, but a nara is natural, which means sometimes it has water and sometimes it doesn't. And still, even though it doesn't have water, it still has a definition of a nahar. So that means that if the fire jumps over the nahar, even though there's currently no water in the nahar, you're going to be pater. Masha Enkin, according to Shmuel, Arisa de Delai means it has to be a water source. And the only thing that's going to create a patur is only if there's water in the water source. If there's no water, then there's no patur. Tanan Hassan. We're going to learn together right now a Mishnah and Peah. The reason why we're going to learn this Mishnah and Peah right now is because what was mentioned a couple of moments ago in the Gemara was if the fire jumps over a shalulit. And right now, let's pretend, and we don't have to pretend, but let's pretend like we don't know what the word means. So, we're going to learn together a Mishnah and Peah, and after learning the Mishnah and Peah, we're going to have a better idea of what it means. Just as one quick introductory remark, The mitzvah pay is that you have to dedicate a corner of the field where the poor people can go into the corner and help themselves. How big does the corner of the field have to be? You actually know the answer to that already. There is no prescribed size of how big the corner could be. And the first thing mentioned over there is hapeya. Peya, there's no prescribed size. The Chachamim gave a general shear in terms of how big the corner has to be. But it's you have to set aside a corner of the field. One corner per field, meaning if let's say you own land and you have multiple fields, every field needs its own corner. And then the Mishnah Peah over here is describing, this is the second parak of Peah. The Mishnah Peah is describing what exactly is the definition of a field. Meaning what is considered a natural barrier between one field and another field, even if it's owned by the same person, where the person is going to have to set aside a Peah for each of these fields. That's what we're learning together in this Mishnah Peah. Tanan Hasam, we learn together. Elumav Sikin LaPeah, these are the things that create a barrier, a natural barrier between one field and another, requiring you to put a corner, to place aside a corner for every field. Hanachal Vehashlulis. Vederech Hayachid. Vederech Harabim. Four things that are creating a natural barrier, and one of the four things is a shlolis. So my shlolis, so what is that making, what is that a reference to? Am Rav Yehuda Meshmul Makom Shemei Geshamim Sholem Sham. So one opinion of the Gemara is where it is a recess in the ground, it's an indentation in the ground, and when it rains, the rainwater collects in that indentation. Rav Bibi Amar Rav Yochanan Amas Amayim Shemechalekes Shalal La'akpei. And Rav Yochanan says it's actually a canal. It's actually a canal, and a canal used for the purposes of irrigating the land. Now, manda amar makom shemek shem shalom sham koshken amas amayim. Now, if it's just a small indentation in the ground where the rainwater collects, so if that creates a barrier between properties, for sure an irrigating canal is going to create a barrier between properties. However, but if you subscribe to the idea that a sholel is a irrigating canal, if it's just a little indentation that collects the rainwater, that's not going to be enough. Dahanu, we're now on the top of Samach Alpha Mibes. Dahanu Bagne Da Ari Mikro. Those are just simply considered the ridges and the bumps, the natural indentations that exist in land, and it's not going to create a barrier between properties. Okay, we start the next Mishnah. Amalik Besoch Shalom Ad Kama Tavor Ad Leika. You light a fire in your own property. How far does the fire have to travel in order to still ascribe that fire to you, or to no longer ascribe the fire to you? So I mentioned a moment ago that the Mishnah is going to give various opinions. Here they are. Rabbi Lazman Nazar Yamarona Sokilu Hu Beemtza Base Kor. You have to be in the middle of a base kor. A base kor is a, in terms of linear measurement, 273 by 273 amas, and the fire has to be central in that area. So in other words, half of 273 in every direction. Rabbi Lazar Amar Tezayin Amas Keder Chushos HaRabim. Rabbi Lazar says 16 amas. There's a wide range of opinions over here. Rabbi Akiva Omer Chamishim Amar. Rabbi Akiva says 50 amas. And Rabbi Shimon Omer Shalem Yishalem Hamavir Sabeira Kol Afiyat Leika. And Rabbi Shimon says really it's all relative. Meaning you're asking how big a distance does it have to be in order so that the fire is no longer your fault. Rabbi Shimon says really depends on the size of the fire. If it's a big fire, you need a bigger distance. If it's a small fire, smaller distance. It's a extraordinarily reasonable approach. So the Gemara now notes, now it comes out that according to Rabbi Shimon, there's no objective shear. It really just depends on the size of the fire. However, the Gemara says, let's consider together the Gemara and Baba Basra. I think it's the second parak of Baba Basra, the Mishnah. Lo yamid adam tanor b'soch habayis alayim ken yesh agabo gova dalet amos. The Gemara over here talks about general code, fire codes, if you will, when you put an oven in your house. When you put an oven in your house, so there has to be 4 amos of space between the oven and the ceiling. If there are not 4 amos of space and your oven starts a fire, you will be held liable. So it's even more than that, meaning your neighbor can can get involved in your business and tell you that you got to take your oven in and move it outside. So im ken yeshal gavodal amos hayam amida ba'aliya. So let's say you're living in the second floor and you want to put an oven down on the second floor. So here you have to make sure that there's enough material between the oven and the floor so that the oven doesn't cause a fire on the floor. So adji heitachta ma'aziva shoshat tfachim. So there has to be three tfachim of material. Uvikira tefach. Now if it's a kira, it's a smaller type of oven, so it only needs a tefach worth of material. Vim hizik mashalim mashi hizik. Now if it damages, you have to pay for that which it damaged. Rabbi Shimon Omer, lo namer shirim halalu ala shim hizik patim l'shalim. These shirim are there to tell us that if they go ahead and do damage, you're going to be exempt from the damage in which you've done. Basically, what we've just learned together is that according to Rabbi Shimon, there are objective shiurim when you're building an oven or when you're putting a kira into your house. There are standard codes in terms of distance between the oven and the ceiling, and codes in terms of how much material is needed between the oven and the floor below. And Rabbi Shimon is subscribing to objective linear measurements. So how can our Mishnah say that according to Rabbi Shimon? Well, it depends. Here in the Mishnah Baba Basra, it doesn't depend. There are standard measurements. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baravu, Akol Lefi Gova Hadleika. So the Gemara gives a couple of suggestions. One suggestion, and that is that when we're talking about starting a fire, when you're talking about starting a fire, meaning an oven is a more concentrated area, and an oven is also an apparatus, it's a kli. So there you can talk about standard measurements. But if you're actually making a fire in your open area, in your field, so then Rabbi Shimon will tell you really will depend on the size of the fire. I'm Rav Yosef, I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Rav Shmuel, halachi Rabbi Shimon, v'chein I'm Rav Nachman, I'm Rav Shmuel, halachi Rabbi Shimon. So of the four opinions that we learned together in the Mishnah, so the Gemara favors the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, that really it's going to be dependent on the fire. Although we're not given, truth be told, even though we now know the halachas like Rabbi Shimon, we're not given any kind of ratio in terms of how big a fire and how far distance do you have to make in order to be pater. And it's also interesting because the Gemara told us that the previous Mishnah is Stam going like Rabbi Eliezer. Okay. Hamadlik es hakedush v'ayu bo kelim v'dalku. Here we are in the Mishnah on Samach Aleph Amud Beis, and this is it. This is the Mishnah that talks about Tamun. Meaning we've been talking about Tamun through the Gemara, through the lens of the Gemara, for a number of times throughout this Masechta. But this is the Mishnah. So if you light somebody's haystack, and there were utensils hidden in the haystack, and the utensils were on fire, Rav Yehuda Amar Mishalem Masha Besochel. So Rav Yehuda says you're going to be liable, not only for burning the haystack, but for whatever's hidden inside. V'chachamim Amar Mishalem Elagadish Shachitim, Oshol Sa'arim. And according to the Chachamim, no, you're going to pay for the haystack. Now, as far as that which was hidden inside, you're putter, like we've been discussing time and again. And what we're going to do is we're going to assume that instead of whatever was hidden inside, we're going to replace it with whatever you burnt. If it was a stack of wheat, you're going to pay wheat. If it's a stack of barley, you're going to pay barley. Haigedi kafaslav eved samachlav. Let's say the goat was tied up next to the haystack, and there was also an eved kenani that was not tied up next to the haystack, v'nisraf imo, and they both got burned together with the haystack, chayev. You're going to have to pay for the damages that you did. Now, aren't you considered a murderer? And shouldn't we employ the rule of kimle b'derabimine? So Rashi over here points out, and we pointed it out earlier as well, the eved was not tied up. The eved was in a position where he could have walked up and he could have ran away, and he didn't. So even though she did it was terrible, but you are not a murderer because the Eved should have taken care of himself and should have ran away. Eved kafasol v'gedi samachlo. If let's say you had the Eved that was tied up next to the haystack, you lit the haystack on fire, and the Eved was burnt together with the haystack, and as the goat was as well, v'nisrefimo pater. You're now going to be exempt from having to pay because now we have the rule of kimle b'derabimine. By starting the fire, you have now burnt a human being, you are now a murderer, you are chayiv misa, so once you're chayiv misa, you're going to be pater from mamon, based on the rule of kim le'ben rabin mine. Again, Rashi goes through all this in more detail. We discussed this earlier in the Masechta as well. If you light somebody's house on fire, so think about it. According to the Chachamim, are you going to be exempt for having to pay for all the contents of the house? Because the Chachamim say that you're pater from Tumun. If something's hidden, you don't have to pay. And what we're about to learn together is that that's not an absolute. If we're talking about a house, there's a clear expectation that there are things that are going to be put in the house. And there, the Chachamim are going to agree to Rav Yehuda that you're going to have to be liable to pay for all the contents of the house. That doesn't fall under the category of Tumun. Let's go through this really quickly. The Rav Kahana was going to try to minimize the machlokes between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. It's only when you light the fire in your property and spreads over to someone else's property. So the Rabbi Yehuda mechaven is ketamun beish v'rabban patre. There the debate exists between the Chachamim and Rav Yehuda. However, if I start the fire in my friend's property, and then it burns the haystack, and there were things in the haystack. Divrei hakol, according to everybody, you're going to have to pay for that which was in. So Amalei Ravi Yachai. So Rava says to Rav Kahana, you cannot be right, because if your distinction were true, the Mishnah would have said it. Because we've said time and again, the Mishnah, if the Mishnah can give a better distinction, the Mishnah would have done that. Ad nisef amodim chacham l'Rav Yehuda, b'malek ez habir, shem Hashem kol mash besocho, shekein derech b'nei ad nalanech b'batim. Before the Mishnah, moving to a case of lighting someone's houses on fire, lifnog v'lisne b'dida. Why doesn't the Mishnah give the simpler example of burning somebody's haystack while on their property? So why didn't the Mishnah give that example, which would have been a better distinction, that if I light the fire in their property, according to everybody, I'm going to be chayv tamun? I'm a Rava betarti pligi. So Rava says, truth be told, is that Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim are having two different debates. In terms of whether you lit the fire on your property and spread it to someone else's property, we have this debate of Tamun between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. Fine. And then Upliginami Bamadlik Bishal Khaver, Rav Yehuda Savri Misham Kamash Basoko, Viafilo Arniki, Virabban Savri, Kalin Shadakh Lahatmin Bagadish Gagon, Morigan Ukli Bakr. Now, as far as lighting the fire in your friend's property, so here, the Chachamim will say to Rav Yehuda, this is where we're going to not agree with you, but not totally disagree with you. If you light a friend, if you start the fire in your friend's property, and you lit the haystack on fire, if there are things that are normally kept in a haystack, right, Morigan. Morigan is some sort of tool that's used in the field. Right, Rashi describes it as something used for threshing. So if there are things in the haystack that are normally in the haystack, so then the Chachamim said to Rav Yehuda, so then I agree, you're going to be liable. But if there are things that really do not belong in the haystack, so then you're going to be pater. And as Rashi over here points out, and that was what the Mishnah was trying to articulate. Meaning the Mishnah gave the example of the house. It's basically the same point. If I light somebody's house on fire, so then it's expected that in a house you keep all your furniture, right? Basically everything, all your possessions. Most of your possessions are kept in your house. So under those circumstances, that's what the Chachamim is saying to Rav Yehuda. That would be similar to going into someone's property, starting a fire in someone's property, lighting the haystack on fire. If there are things that are normally kept in the haystack, like the material, like tools that are used in the field, so then you'd be chayev. Much like a house, things are normally kept in the house. So in that regard, the Chachamim are going to agree to Rav Yehuda. But if things that are unusually not kept there, so then you're going to be potter, even if you start the fire in your friend's property.